GM Summer Drive is back. Right now, get up to $5,000 cash back on 2004 GM cars and trucks. Take delivery by August 31st. See your dealer or GM.com for details.
And now, the Phil Henry Show with Phil Henry. West of the Rockies, dial 1-800-449-8686. East of the Rockies, dial 1-800-449-8686. First-time callers, dial 1-800-449-8686. And the wildcard line is 1-800-449-8686. And now, here's Phil Henry.
And tonight, Margaret Gray will... Am I on the air? Oh, yeah. Yes, I can see the green dots are going up. Now. Tonight, Margaret Gray is going to be in Boston with her final report. She'll be reporting on John Kerry's speech. That'll be coming up in a few minutes. We're going to allow the presumed nominee, Senator Kerry, to give his speech, and then Margaret will have her comments on it. And I don't know how many of you guys will be, watching the speech, or if you care. So I figure maybe we shouldn't talk about that. We'll talk about something else. I can sit here and tell you that he's entering the hall now. There's tons and tons of people in straw hats shaking his hand. Lots of people from the Puerto Rican territory and the great state of Vermont and the granite state of Montana or whatever. I haven't watched much of the convention, but I have to assume they're doing the same stuff they do at every convention since I've been watching convention. I think I remember the first convention I ever saw. I think I was 8, and it was the Democratic Convention in L.A. in 1960, and they were doing it then, and they're doing it now.
Mr. Chairman, the state of Illinois, where Lincoln lived, where Jeffrey Dahmer spent a weekend. They roll it out.
Whatever's good, bad, anything.
The great state of South Dakota, where the largest ball of yarn still exists.
So I'm going to have to assume they do that, and we'll see that. When they nominate the cat, which is tonight, they will take the vote. So at 8, we'll talk about Margaret's impressions of the John Kerry speech. And just to let you know a little personal news, my wife is out of town. She went to Chicago. There's nothing wrong with us. It's just that she's decided to go off with her girlfriends for 3 or 4 days. In conjunction with that, my kids have left for Texas, where they are going to be working on the... some kind of nuclear project. No, they're there to visit some relatives. So it's just me and the cat for the next 3 days. And, it's pretty bad when the cat looks at you and you can just see the disappointment in his eyes. You can just see the disappointment in my cat's eyes when he looks at me and goes, oh, so you're it for the next 3 days. Well, that's great. And he's a great cat, but I ain't all that much fun because I just sit and watch TV. And next thing you know, you ever noticed how cats will kill something and drag it in the house, right? The reason why they do that is to show you that they're taking care of the perimeter, the property. Around where we live, we have a lot of coyotes. I just saw one today as I was leaving my house. Little tiny coyote pup walking down the road. He must have been hungry because when he saw me, he didn't do anything. He didn't, run right away. He sort of stared at me. And for a minute there, I had the urge to go and get some Purina dog chow and maybe put it in a bowl for him, but I didn't. I just drove on. But I know he's out there looking for food, and one of the things that the coyotes in our neighborhood look for are stray cats. Now, the dumb cat that we have got out one night, and the next thing I hear a splash in the pool, and my son has jumped into the pool. He's saving the cat from a coyote that was about this close to making that cat into something he was going to stick on a spit and slow roast. And so the dumb cat is not so dumb anymore. He won't go outside. But the real whole reason why they want to get outside is they want to find animals to show you that they're, killing the animals in the perimeter of the house. And one night, and when this cat goes out, we can't go to bed because we don't know if he's going to get killed or not. And he's one of these cats, he'll bolt, man. As soon as the doors open, boom, he's gone. You just feel like a brush of fur by your leg, and he's out there. So now it's, what do we got to do now? Well, we got to wait up and see when he comes home. And hope he hasn't been drinking. And so I'm hanging around and I'm hanging around. The next thing I know, my son says, okay, the cat's in the house and he's got a small rodent. I'm not sure what it is. So you're kidding, right? So I go in there. Sure enough, he's got a mouse. It couldn't be more than 3 inches long. Little tiny mouse that he's batting around. So I look at him, I go, good for you, you got a freaking mouse, okay? And I took the mouse and I threw it outside. I didn't kill it or anything. I just picked it up by its stupid little tail and whipped him out of the wood, into the weeds someplace. I'm pretty cool with the rodents around my neighborhood. Where I should be killing them, I saved their lives. Like that one gopher I saved, I told you about three summers ago. This freaking gopher fell into my pool, and what did I do? I fished him out and let him live. 3 days later, I got holes all through the yard. I mean everywhere. That gopher that I saved ruined my back lawn. Now, you know, as a man, I'm very proud of my lawn. Most men are very, very proud of how green and lush and putting green perfect their lawns are. And when some stinking gopher starts sticking holes, hey, look, I want a putting green, I'll put the holes in myself, gopher. Thank you. One other thing about gophers, man, sticking a hose down that hole and turning it on full blast, they're taking a bath in it. It doesn't do anything to them. The freaking gopher, I put the hose down there, and I go, watch this. I mean, it's everything out of the Bill Murray thing in Caddyshack. Turn the hose on full blast, and while the water is pumping down there, the gopher came up and looked around kind of wet, just going, ah, oh, it's kind of refreshing, and went back down in the hole. So anyway, that's what I get for saving. This mouse is going to turn up probably about 18 feet long like a huge rat someday, and it'll be out eating the garbage for all that, or eating the cat if I got any luck. So anyway, the cat came back that night. He had like a black eye and a bruise over his face. He learned his freaking lesson. This is a dumb cat, man. He got locked in the closet one weekend. 2 days he's in a closet because we're all gone. Took a crap in there, peed in there, everything. Why? Because he likes to go in there and look around. And then somebody shuts the door and he figures the humans will be along in a few minutes to let me out. Yeah, 2 whole freaking days, Skinny. That's what you get for your trouble. So, yeah, it's going to be another weekend with everybody out of the house. The summer. You know, man, I'm not taking the vacations I used to. I used to go off and do really wild things. Now it's just the usual Mexico thing. It's my wife and kids that are going off and doing stuff. I can't afford to take a vacation. We got an election year going on right now. I got to keep abreast of all of the political stuff going on. All of the guys that are running for president. I couldn't tell you who they are, but I know ain't there an election going on in November? I got to stay up on all that stuff. So no, I ain't going to Chicago. I ain't going out of Texas and I ain't going to Mexico. I'm going to stay here. I'm going to stare at the cat and I'm just going to go through the newspaper, get depressed, just load a revolver and attempt suicide. And one other thing, just if I could mention this. I've said this before and I have to do this at least once every 3-4 months. For all of you who are visiting the Southern California area this summer and enjoying our many amusements, certainly Disneyland and the many amusement parks, as well as our mountains, beaches, and desert, I hope you enjoy yourselves. And when you're on the freeway, especially you guys from Florida, we use turn signals out here. I know it comes as a big shock because when I lived in Miami, they didn't know what that thing was for. They thought it was another gear shift or something. They never heard of a turn signal in Florida. They just swing right over. Well, guess what I saw today? I saw some guy with a Florida plate trying to change lanes with no turn signal. He got clipped by this semi. This dude with the Florida plate starts doing a 360, fishtailing all over the freeway and almost did kind of a side over side and came to rest on an embankment on the side. And the guy was African-American, but not after that. He was the color of me, wide nostrils and all, just me, with freckles. Guy was just, if I'd have had the time, I would have got out and taken a picture. You got to use a turn signal. The other thing you want to do, if you're in the fast lane, number one lane, like I always say, get your stupid rear end out of there, man, if you ain't doing at least 75 or 80. I don't care if the speed limit's 65, 75 or 80. These guys that get in that lane and go real slow, and because don't you just want to, don't you really, road rage is an option. And then they look at you as you go around them with this look like, yeah, see, you couldn't go past me. I'm on the lane. I, me. It's all about me and I. Get off your phone. One other thing that you might want to know. If the speed of our freeways out here frightens you, stay off of them. Take a surface street. Take a dirt road. Ride the train. Fly. Just get off my freeway. Thank you. And I had the rare opportunity this morning taking my wife to the airport to actually get in the Diamond Lane. And I was actually, like, sailing along the 405 at about 65, 70, man, looking at all those suckers going by me and on my right-hand side, just dropping like flies. And all I did was stick my hand out the window and go, see you later, suckers. That was fun. Tonight, it's Margaret Gray from the convention with her final report on John Kerry's speech and the presumed nomination. We also have a how to read a news story. You know, you can read a news story, but do you know how to read a news story? I got a good one for you, and a mailbag is coming up tonight on The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686 is our number, and our email address, phs@philhenryshow.com.
Phil Henry, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Margaret Gray tonight from the Convention Center in Boston with her impressions on Senator Kerry's speech. And I totally blew it. They nominated his rear end last night, didn't they? They did all of that, Mr. Chairman, the great state of Oregon, home of the Beaver Brigade. We do hereby solemnly swear that John Kerry is the greatest thing since buck teeth. So that cat's, he's in, baby. Be running up against Bush. And I would suggest you vote, but you don't have to. Doesn't make much of a difference, does it? Well, it could have made some difference in the year 2000, but then who knows? I still don't know how many votes short Gore was. What was it, like 3 or 4? Oh, like 3,000? You know, that's one of those stories. It's never really, when the truth is thought, it's the thing I love about history. The story of the 2000 election has not been told. You can't get the full, true history of anything without about 20 or 30 years elapsing between the event and the time they finally write about it and understand it. Honest to God. Now, the year 2000, the election that year, depending upon who you talk to, either Gore got screwed or Bush, you know, got screwed because he should have gotten way more votes than he did. It's never, there's not one person I've ever talked to where they don't have an opinion that doesn't fall down along a partisan point of view. And maybe a vote counts, and maybe it counts for a lot, and maybe it would have come down to like one vote, and maybe if they did the recount, Gore would have won, and maybe if they did the recount, Bush would have won by 18 million. And maybe they just don't know how to count in Florida, and maybe they had to make Florida territory and make Puerto Rico the state. I don't know. But I'll vote, because if I don't, then I'm never going to stop hearing about it from my wife. It's got nothing to do with being credible on the air. I can tell you that I vote, and you guys are going to believe me, right? Or I can tell you that I didn't vote, and you guys might think I'm kidding. But the point is that I'll vote, but it's not because I have to be credible on the air. It's because my wife is going to scream and yell at me if I don't. Because I won't have my little American flag pin. Looking at the convention tonight, I've seen Leonardo DiCaprio and John Cusack. Let's get to the real news, baby. Hey, by the way, if you're coming to the business, the show business, any of you young people out there, there ain't nothing, because I belong to the Screen Actors Guild, nothing in there that says you have to, like, be a Democrat. And there ain't nothing in there that says you have to sort of be stupid, too, because every time these guys show up at one of these conventions, I'm surprised they haven't had one of them sitting there in the anchor booth. Well, John, fantastic. Loved you in whatever movie that was that you did with Jack Black, and the rest of it's garbage, but, well, thank you very much. You're welcome. So what do you think?
I don't know. It's the amazing process, isn't it? It's just great.
All right, Leonardo DiCaprio, come on in here. Leonardo, how you doing?
Great.
So thanks for that bang-up job in Gangs of New York and Titanic.
You're welcome.
Well, that's it, and good night.
Okay.
And then they have, I think I saw one other, oh yeah, there he is. Yep, I knew that was him. Jim Nabors, who's out of retirement, has showed up at the Democratic National Convention. Aunt B is there. Everybody from One Day at a Time, everybody from Days of Our Lives, even the old cast from The Edge of Night. We've got, look at Barbara Streisand is there, or is that just one of the Teamsters working at, yeah, no, I'm sorry. Oh, wait a minute. I'm pretty damn sure that that's Larry David. No, it ain't. It's that guy from The Sopranos. All right, coming up, Margaret Gray will be reporting from the Democratic National Convention, talking about her impressions of John Kerry's speech, also how to read a news story. And Nickelodeon is going to be going off the air for 3 hours on October the 2nd. They issued a press release. It's the biggest thing that could possibly happen in television. A television network is going to go off the air for 3 whole hours. Why? Because the message is, kids, get out and play. And because Nickelodeon is a kid's channel, they want the kids to get out and go and play. Why does it got to be them going off the air? Why can't it be CBS or NBC or ABC or one of them? How about Fox or the WB? Notice I said the WB or UPN. I mean, if those guys will go off the air, maybe we got something here. Nickelodeon? Blue's Clues and all that? No. I ain't living with that. They're going to go off the air for three. This has never been done before in the history of television. A station saying, and they make a big point out of telling you they're going to be losing $10 million doing it too. See what a bunch of nice guys they are? We're going to drop $10 million, but we're going off the air because, you know what? The kids need to get outside. The kids ain't going to go outside, man. You know what they're going to do? They're going to just flip it on over to some other kid channel, Disney maybe, or plug in one of those video games. Because when my daughter ain't watching Rugrats, Powder Puff Girls, or whatever the hell else is happening, even Steven's off the air, ain't it? She's playing that SpongeBob SquarePants video game. And one of the things about my kids, they never turn the game off, so my television set for hours at a time just has bubbles going up. Like 3 hours, man, just blah. And the other thing about these video games that my boys are playing, they're playing a game, it's not Halo, it's a new one, but it's got this Gregorian chant music. It sounds like a cross between a bunch of monks making beer and a satanic rites initiation. It's just, oh. And so I'm walking by the room, this is all I'm hearing. Will you guys turn that off, please? You ever notice how you sound like your old man? I'm sounding like my old man when I'm screaming at him to turn it off or turn it down. Because I'm all of a sudden now I'm noticing, yeah, my old man was right. I did listen to crap loud. Why? I had good hearing. It's the sensory experience, that's why. Like this morning, the guys are watching the tube, and it's just blasting. I mean, what's it freaking so loud for, you guys?
What? I didn't know this was loud.
I got blood coming out of my nose. What, are you kidding?
Well, it doesn't affect me at all.
What is this game? Are you telling me for real, man, that I've seen the kids playing Grand Theft Auto? I never saw them score points by getting a hooker in the backseat of a car. Are you serious?
I swear to God.
I got to start playing that game. The other thing is, Hefner's got a new game out, how you can be Hef and live at the Playboy Mansion and order Cokes from quasi-gay waiters and butlers. It's great. And Carmen Electra, if you're real lucky, will say hi to you. In other words, you can get a video game and you can actually, you know, be Hef for a day. Which means you'll have had several strokes, your hair is white, you've got a bunch of blondes that look like your granddaughters, and you're taking Viagra by the handful. Hey, Hef, if you want to come out with that game, man, maybe about 30, 40 years ago would have been a good time. Not now, dude. Not now that you've got like a plastic valve in the middle of your chest. And you're dancing in your pajamas. You know, the only people that dance in their pajamas, man, that look like you, they're in the day room over here at Shady Oaks, you know? And they got somebody saying, all right, let's get back in the chair. Okay, yes, we'll have the notebook as soon as it comes out on DVD. Used to be cool when you danced in pajamas, Hef. Now you're dancing in your pajamas, and you look like some old man who's got dementia. You look like a guy that they need to lock down. All right, put him back in the locked ward. You look like one of them old cats with a, you know, hasn't shaved in 3 days. Let's get you shaved up, Mr. Hefner. Yeah, I know. I had to talk to your girlfriend. You're right. You're my hero, man. How to read a news story is next. Some lady got busted for eating candy in the subway. Or did she? Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
All right, we will have how to read a news story in a second. I got a flashback. Margaret, not Margaret, Bobby Dooley. You know, folks, after a while, they just all run together in your head. I start thinking I'm them. Bobby Dooley, who is the president of the Western States Homeowners Association, was on our program, and she was talking about how, lo and behold, mother mind your skirts, she got carded at a liquor store, and she's 45, or is it 39 years old? That's right. She got carded, and she's on to tell you that, well, she got carded because she's youthful. She acts young. She acts very girlish. In fact, she acts so girlish, she tells her husband that she hates him, and she runs out of the room crying a lot. Here's Bobby.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
As a 45-year-old woman who is married with two children, you said?
Yes, I've got three sons.
Okay. Well, I have one son, and he's 2 years old.
Yes.
I think at your age, you should be more concerned with raising your children and being a good wife instead of worrying about somebody at a liquor store thinking you're young.
Okay, now let me ask you this.
Because if you're on the highway trying to outrun a police officer and you're a mother and
a
wife.
That's what teenage girls do.
You're engaging in youthful behavior, outrunning cops, telling your husband you hate him, telling your sons you hate them and leaving the room. Flirting with men in clubs, lying on the floor and talking on the phone all day.
You know something, what is wrong with a woman staying youthful?
In my opinion, I'm still youthful, very youthful.
Wait a minute, I want to ask you something. You say you're 23, but you have the name Gladys.
Yes.
Ah, gotcha.
What does my name have to do with it?
That is not a name that this current generation gives to their children.
Well,
Gladys is an older generation name. Now, I submit that you're older, or you come from Guatemala or I don't know, Ethiopia or something.
Well, you know what? If I did come from Ethiopia, I would be grateful to my culture, my country, my religion.
Well, where are you from?
Whatever you would think of it, to be able to raise me to be a 23-year-old mother who knows better than...
Why are you named Gladys? I don't get the name Gladys.
But listen to me.
I don't get the name Gladys for 23-year-old. What is that about?
My name has nothing to do with it.
They might as well call you Gertrude or Blanche. It just doesn't happen.
Okay.
Forget her name, will you?
My point is that everybody is saying that you're acting...
Get out in a minute.
You're saying that you're acting youthful and like a teenager.
Yeah.
You're not.
I'm gay and carefree.
It was not that long ago that I was a teenager, and I was more responsible as a teenager than to go speeding down a highway when you've got two children and a husband waiting for you at home.
Don't get old before your years, Gladys. Have some fun.
I have
flirt with
fun,
men.
Sweetheart. I have
outrun police
fun,
cars.
And I am still having fun.
Click your tongue and your...
Responsible.
God,
because at
weird.
The end of the day...
Say that to people.
At the end of the day, I have to come home to my child to raise him in an adequate way so that he does not have to...
Yes. And
run into
like
people like
I
you
can understand
on the highway.
If you're a single mother, I understand what you're talking about.
All
Why
right.
would you automatically think I'm single?
The name's Gladys. You come from probably a Latin American country.
Are you that well-educated
two and two together.
That you would automatically think that because I have the name Gladys that I am
that
not
is
American?
That's not an American name. That is
that most certainly is. My aunt's name is Gladys.
It doesn't
She's
matter
88,
if my
Phil.
Name is Laquifa
well,
or Shaniqua
Queef.
Or any or Maria.
All right,
it does not matter. It does not matter.
All right.
Because as a 23-year-old female,
oh
I am more responsible.
She's 23. You're
I am more responsible
and you clean
at
houses.
This point in my life
right.
than you have ever been.
Yeah.
And
there's no reason for you, Ms. Dooley, to belittle this woman just because her name is Gladys.
Well, there is
and
a reason for her to belittle me because she is so immature and
no.
she has not grown up.
You're
That's
really
what she
weird.
Needs to do.
You're weird.
You know, this is how
Why
you
am
stay...
I weird? Because I'm responsible?
This is how you stay youthful. Calling people weird, clicking your tongue and rolling your eyes, staying on the phone, laying on the floor, outracing cop cars, and saying you hate...
What's your name? Gladys Kravitz? That's the only Gladys I know, and she was on Bewitched. And she cleaned houses. Case closed. Thank you.
I think that if I cleaned your
All
house,
right.
I'd have a better chance
Gladys,
to raise
thank
your
you very
children
much.
Than you would.
Do you use lavender bath beads?
Forget it!
Oh, you know the other Gladys I knew? Gladys Knight. Thank you.
Well, I think Grinowski doesn't need to be concerned with that because he's such a racist.
Steve, I'm drowning.
He needs to get over it. He needs to get over herself.
Mr. Dooley, you there?
No, she's drowning.
Oh, thank God.
What happened?
I don't know. I slipped under the water, and I was trying to act so immature, I forgot that I knew how to swim. Oh, sweet Jesus.
Bill Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
God, is she strange. Bobby was taking a bath. You notice how many of our guests these days are taking, I don't know, you guys at home, if you've noticed that or not, but I notice a lot of them are taking baths while they're talking to us. Now, I've never heard that before. What if you had, like after Carrie gets nominated tonight or, you know, whenever, what if he's in, like, taking a tub while he's talking to the press? Well, I'll tell you guys right now, we're going to kick some crap out there and wash. Or it's just going to kick the hell out of everybody. And can I have the soap, please? Irish Spring, huh? Now, anyway, guy's lathering up. It's time now for How to Read a News Story on the Phil Henry Show. And this story comes to us from Washington, D.C., sometimes you read a story and you think you know what it is, but in point of fact, you don't. The headline says, woman arrested for eating candy in Subway. Now, wouldn't that get you outraged? Wouldn't you go, oh, my God, what have we come to? We're arresting people for eating candy in the Subway. Proof positive that John Ashcroft is the second coming of Heinrich freaking Himmler. Eating candy in a Subway. That's what we would all think from the headline of a story written by Candace Smith. Ah, hey, Candy Smith, in other words, huh? So who is eating candy in the Subway? Hold on for a minute.
FCC.
So in other words, I...
No, you blew it.
All right. Candace Smith writes with the headline, woman arrested for eating candy in Subway. Eating on Route 2 or while riding the Subway in Washington is a no-no. Stephanie Willett, a government employee, found that out the hard way recently. Finishing a candy bar on her way into a metro station, she was arrested, handcuffed, and detained for 3 hours. Now, one thing you need to know, they don't allow you to eat in the subways. It has something to do with bringing things in to a subway station, which could be a potential target for terrorist attack. Is it a good law? Is it a bad law? I don't know. But the point is, it's the law. You're not allowed to eat. I'm just giving you the background on that. Willett said she was eating a payday bar on an escalator descending into a station on July 16th when a transit cop warned her to finish it before entering the station. Now, both Willett and police agree that she nodded and put the last bit into her mouth before throwing the wrapper into a trash can. So she took the last bit of that little payday, which, have you ever seen a payday? It's like a nut log. It's pretty disgusting to look at, if you want to be honest about it. The only worst-looking candy bar is the Baby Ruth. I can even eat a Baby Ruth. You look at that thing and you go, okay, so this is what it's come to, huh? I'm eating turds now? Is this why I grew up in America? Is this why I pay my taxes? Because you guys wrap a turd up in a wrapper and you call it a candy bar? I'm going to pay, what, a buck and a half for this? Are you crazy? Well, try it, Mr. Henry. It's chocolate and nuts. No, I don't believe it. Just mentioning the word nuts has got me a little suspicious. I ain't eating that. And I'm not eating no payday. Didn't you hear Mr. Hershey the other day on the show? So she ate the last little bit and put it into her mouth. Now, you're not allowed to eat candy bars. So the cop followed her, and he said, I got to issue a citation. Okay? So what they do is they'll give you a citation for eating a candy bar in a subway station in D.C. Maybe it's wrong, maybe it's right, but that's what they do. They give you a citation. Aha! She wasn't arrested for eating the candy bar. Here's why she was arrested. She refused to stop when the officer told her to stop. And as she continued to walk, she looked at the cop and said, don't you have some other crimes you can take care of? Well, cops are not in the job of making laws, nor are they in the job of fielding opinion. They don't do talk shows. They don't work in Congress. They're just cops. They enforce law. So when you give them lip, all you're doing is pissing them off. And if you think you're going to get away from them, you ain't going to do it. I don't care how badass you think you are. So guess what happened? She kept on walking. She failed to heed the officer's order to stop. So they arrested her. Not because she was eating a candy bar, but because she would not stop when the cop said, stop, I have to give you a ticket. So why are stories like this written? Because otherwise, it'd be a slow damn news day. And part of the reason why we do a feature called How to Read a News Story is to let you in on the inner workings of the news media and people that write news stories. This writer, Candace Smith, had absolutely nothing to report yesterday. She went out into the city of Washington and she couldn't find one story, not one. So she found out about this gal that got popped for eating in the subway, and it's happened, or she got was going to get a ticket for eating in the subway. It's happened many times in Washington. Instead, she was arrested because she wouldn't stop when the officer told her to stop, and she turns it into woman arrested for eating a candy bar in a subway. And why? Why are we giving that story? Because Candace Smith couldn't find a story. She needs to give her editor something that's going to be mildly interesting, or she won't get a byline in the paper, and so she phonied this headline up and kind of dummied the story around it, and in the meantime, you and I are misinformed. That's what I'm trying to tell you. In fact, she doesn't let up. At the very last line of the story, she writes, Willett was the second person arrested this year for eating or drinking. In addition, police have issued 58 tickets and given more than 300 written warnings. But she wasn't arrested for eating or drinking. She was arrested for failing to heed an officer's order to stop. And when you're on a high terrorist alert footing and somebody doesn't stop when you tell them to stop, the cop begins to think there's something wrong here. Otherwise, she would have gotten a ticket or maybe even a warning because they give them out. That's how to read a news story. One of these days, I'm going to stop doing this feature because you guys will know now how to read a freaking news story, okay? But just understand, the news is not the news unless you get it from a lot of different places and unless you're willing to read it critically. Otherwise, you've got a reporter who wants you to believe something because they want you to read their story because they want to get in the paper because they want to get paid. I wish I had that horn to lock out how to read a news story, but I don't have it handy. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show website is available at www.philhenryshow.com for only $6.95. You get a backstage pass and high-quality audio in our audio archives. Plus, if you visit our souvenir shop, grab the best of the Phil Henry Show 2003 CD. All the money that we raise from the sale of our CD goes to my friend's place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood. Remember, you can order it online or you can call 1-888-616-7445.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Margaret Gray from the Democratic National Convention in just a few minutes to review John Kerry's speech to the convention. I know I said I was going to vote for Bush. I don't know if you joined me the other night. You heard me saying, no, I'm going to vote for Kerry. I've changed my mind. And seriously, I got a good reason for changing my mind because I've been listening to this guy. Bush makes a big deal out of everything. Al-Qaeda, woo! Terrorism, woo, you know. And they could blow up subway stations. We need the Patriot Act, all that stuff. And I'm listening to Kerry, and he is explaining it perfectly. He's saying, look, we can control terrorists, fix the environment, get back 23 million jobs, dig for our own oil and energy, have Americans be happy and friendly, have races united. We can do it all. And we can do it if we elect him. Why wouldn't I want to vote for that cat, man? I mean, that guy has got it nailed down. I've been making a huge thing out of this terrorism thing. And he said, that ain't no big thing. We can take care of the terrorist thing, and we can take care of the job thing. We can take care of the environment thing. We can take care of the racial divide. We can take care of the gender problem. We can take care of health care. We can all do it if you elect me. So why wouldn't I want to vote for that cat? Because he finally explained it to me. It's a hell of a lot easier than I thought it would be. Bush was making a whole big thing out of Al-Qaeda. Yeah, I understand that 3,000 people got all butchered up there on September the 11th of 2001, but what's that between friends? Well, I mean, no, seriously, I don't mean to belittle it, but Kerry's up here, he's making it all sound pretty easy. And why wouldn't I vote for a guy like that who's got everybody on their feet every time he opens his mouth and says, my friends, hey! My name, is ah, John, ah. It's like a 30-minute standing ovation between each word. See, why was I ignoring the obvious? I kept asking, well, what the hell, man? How can I vote for this guy? He says he's going to get 23 million jobs back, and he's going to do that while there's a threat of terrorism. I don't know. He says he's going to do it, man. He's my man. Why wouldn't I vote for that guy, right? Or maybe he's doing one of those things that politicians do now. Now I'm thinking about it. Maybe he's promising a lot of crap he can't deliver. Wait a second. I might have been born at night, man, but I didn't fall off the turnip truck last night. Maybe he's pulling one of those politician things. He's telling me a bunch of stuff, and maybe he can't come through on it. He says that he can control Al-Qaeda from blowing me up, and he can get 23 million of them jobs, most of them probably pushing a fry bin at McDonald's. And also, no, I'm not going to knock the guys, but he says that he can also get the environment and the health care and the gender thing and fight crime and have the kids go to school. And he says he can do all that stuff. It sounds too good to be true, man. I got to vote for this guy unless the guy's conning me. Now, wait a minute. Who's the other guy that's running? What's his name? Bush? Okay, what's he got to offer? War? And probably continued American deaths in Iraq? And a probable continued reliance on foreign oil because we don't really have our act together here, according to Bush anyway. He tried to go drilling up in Alaska. He can't be doing that, man. He's going to butcher up all those caribou, man. It'll be the worst slaughter since 9/11. You talk about 3,000 people going down from Al-Qaeda, and ain't nothing what Standard Oil's going to do to all them chipmunks. Right? So what is Bush promising me? He's promising me war and the continuation of the possibility of American deaths in Iraq, fighting for these people, and another thing, he lied about the WMDs. Well, maybe he got it wrong about the WMDs. Maybe he was given bad intelligence, but he lied. Because he didn't speak a truth, and not speaking a truth is a lie. Even if you're not sure it was a lie at the time that you said the lie, it's still a lie. And also, he's got that Patriot Act. I'm not too sure about that, but everybody says it's pretty bad and pretty evil. I don't know anybody that's been arrested under it, but it must be bad. And what else has he got? He's got maybe the economy will get better and maybe it won't. He ain't making me any real cool promises. Kerry, on the other hand, he's telling me everything I want to hear. I'm voting for Kerry. Bush is telling me nothing but that's a lot of bad stuff. War and terrorism and being vigilant and yellow alerts. I don't want to know about that, man. I want to vote for a guy that's going to tell me cool stuff. Like Kerry just said, he can make prostate cancer go away, and I'll sprout wings in 2 years. And on top of that, Al-Qaeda will run scared as soon as they see him in his Navy hat. I'm voting Kerry in 2004, or whichever comes first. How about you? That's my endorsement, man. Margaret Gray's coming up in a few minutes. She'll give us the further lowdown on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. Now, Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Margaret Gray is at the Fleet Center in Boston, where John Kerry has just finished his speech to the assembled delegates. And Margaret, we'll let you take it away and give us your impressions of what you heard at the convention this evening, and your impression of John Kerry, the candidate.
Bill, John Kerry has just left the podium, and he has electrified this collection of delegates with the nation at war against an enemy, quote, unlike any we had ever known. John Kerry accepted the Democratic presidential nomination this evening by vowing to defend the United States as commander-in-chief, as he defended it during the Vietnam War. I think it's really important to point out, Phil, that John Kerry does have the military experience, which George Bush does not have, and that's why this evening I want to announce on your program to your listeners and to the many people who have followed my reports here from Boston over the week, I am now endorsing John Kerry for President of the United States.
All right, why?
First of all, George Bush does not have the practical experience to lead this country's military. John Kerry does. And if you heard his speech tonight,
he articulated those things. John Kerry, when he was in Vietnam, had compassion as a soldier. He knew when to engage the enemy in battle, and even more importantly, Phil, he knew when to realize that the enemy were people too, when to see their point of view in battle, and to take that into consideration before attempting to kill them or murder them.
You're calling this kind of the new military thinking?
Yes, to go along with the new patriotism, I think the American people are confused as to what makes a good military leader, and that's why I'm drawn to John Kerry. He embodies bold new thinking in the military arena. When he was in Vietnam, he had the very good sense as a Navy commander to think for himself. He won that Bronze Star because he was able to survive long enough to win it in combat. In combat, Phil, a good commander, a good officer, picks and chooses the battles that he's going to engage in and that will bear fruit. They're going to result in victory. John Kerry's strength was that if the fighting got too intense, he could, if he needed to, turn his patrol boat around and head for cover until the situation became more opportune. He knew when to engage the enemy and to see their point of view. That's why we need him as president. He'll do that domestically. He'll do that internationally with our European allies who have become so disenfranchised and so alienated. And
all right, that's an interesting thought. When you talk about he knew when to turn around in battle and head for cover.
Well, you need to understand that. And that in combat, it is as important to know when to hide as it is when to fight. Let's take that and apply it to the modern world. We have an entire European community against us. The whole world hates us. Because of what George Bush has done, John Kerry now has to come in and right that ship. But he can reconnect us to that world because when he was in Vietnam, again, the combat experience coming into play, there were times that he would pick his battles where he could see things from the enemy's point of view and say, no, I'm not going to engage in battle today because maybe they should capture that village. This is their country. John Kerry saw that Vietnam belonged to the Vietnamese and as a result brought compassion to the military and stood up to his commanders and said, no, I'm not obeying that order because I feel at this particular point of view, at this particular time, the enemy has a point.
And well, wait a minute. How can a military run that way with men and women refusing their orders?
Under Commander-in-Chief Kerry, our military would be strong and resolute, but we wouldn't humiliate our soldiers if they decided they didn't want to fight. George Bush puts those soldiers in jail. He calls them cowards. He calls them traitors. But under John Kerry, a soldier's reasonable doubts about a battle would be taken into consideration.
All right. Our number is 1-800. Hold on for a minute, Margaret. I know you're in the middle of a quickly exiting crowd there at the convention center. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Margaret Gray on the line with us, talking about John Kerry's acceptance speech. You have said that John Kerry took into consideration in Vietnam the enemy's point of view, and that would help us in light of the modern world. But that doesn't it invite confusion and chaos on the battlefield?
It invites the respect of the world community, Phil, the European nations. It also gives our fighting men and women a chance to decide if they want to be in Iraq or not. Right now, there are many soldiers in the United States Army who haven't had their opinions taken into consideration as far as this war goes, because we have so many Army soldiers who've been lied to about this war. The soldiers that have been lied to, we need to pay special attention to them and to hear their point of view. John Kerry is that man. George Bush has put 900 of those men to death in Iraq. And
George Bush put them to death, not the Iraqis.
The Iraqis did what was natural, protecting themselves. It's what John Kerry saw in Vietnam. The Vietnamese were protecting themselves, and John Kerry felt guilty saving the lives of Americans that were trying to kill the Vietnamese. He said, here, Mr. Nixon, take your medals back. Phil, that is a soldier, and it's the courage to know when to retreat with dignity, with your head held high and your weapon slung across your back.
Well, I don't know. In a war on terror, whether that is a good way of thinking with a ruthless enemy.
Look, if John Kerry hadn't decided to, with great dignity, get on a helicopter and leave Vietnam, he wouldn't be running for president. And John Kerry realized that the Viet Cong were not just the enemy. They were people with feelings and emotions. And rather than take the lives of people like that, there were occasions when he would proudly bring his patrol boat about and race away rather than deprive that Viet Cong of the dignity of life. George Bush is so out of touch, it makes me want to cry, Phil.
All right, Margaret Gray at the Fleet Center in Boston. Our number, 1-800-449-8686. You're speaking to us about John Kerry's as a commander-in-chief, because I know much of what his speech centered around was the defense of the country. I want you to tell me a little bit more about what you mean when you say he had the dignity to bring his boat about and run back up the river and not engage the enemy.
John Kerry, I think, Phil, if there's one thing that makes this man so unique, and if there's one thing that really actually characterizes the man, it is his ability to take a look at the situation and to reassess whether he's doing the right thing or not. George Bush won't do that. He just goes right ahead like a bull in a china shop without thinking of the consequences. When John Kerry was in Vietnam, there were times when he would see the enemy approaching, for instance, a position in the field, a village, or perhaps a command post. He had to assess at that time, was it right to kill those soldiers, or should he turn his patrol boat about and go back up the river and hide behind some trees? I think that's the kind of president...
Wait a minute.
No, you need to really understand. You need to read the things on his website, because...
Wait a minute. When to turn his patrol boat about and go back up the river and hide behind some trees?
No, what I'm saying is this.
Because you're making him sound like he was cowardly.
Oh, no. If you read his website, if you read his positions, he understood, my God, these are people too. The enemy has a right to their opinion. So before he went into battle, he would sit down with the other commanders, the other members of his command staff, and assess the situation. What is the opinion of the enemy right now? Are they necessarily doing something wrong by taking this village? Are they?
Well, how can a soldier in the field sit down and on any given day?
Phil, it is the modern world.
Yeah, but on any given day, so, well, wait a minute. I think I see the enemy's point. Maybe they should take this village. You know what I'm saying?
It is the modern world of terrorism, Phil. It's when to fight, when to back off. It's when to know, for instance, that Al-Qaeda is trying desperately to get through to us and make a statement. Do we engage them? Do we get angry? Do we cut off all of our allies? We realize the Europeans want us to take a much, much fairer approach to the terrorists. The French, the British, the Germans, they want us to take into consideration the centuries of oppression, the centuries of murder that the United States has visited upon the people of the Middle East. John Kerry is that man, because in Vietnam he did that. When he came on a firefight, even if they were Americans, they were under attack, he would assess the situation. Is it right for me to attack and kill the enemy now, or should I dock the boat, go back to our command post or wherever, go to sleep, get something to eat, assess the situation?
So John Kerry would sit and get himself something to eat while American soldiers were under attack?
No, I didn't say that.
Yes, you did. You said that even if he saw other soldiers being attacked,
he had the good sense to say, is today the day to fight, or is today the day to go back up the river, tie the boat off, do needed repairs, sit and just quietly contemplate whether this is a good idea or not. And for me,
well, I don't know about anything about warfare. I've never been a soldier, but it sounds like a recipe for chaos.
No, if you read his website, you'll know that it is absolutely the modern approach to taking on an enemy like Al-Qaeda. And believe me, with Al-Qaeda, you just don't go in guns blazing like George Bush did. You sit back, you assess, you realize that, yes, they did something terrible in killing those people. For instance, the World Trade Center. But is it any reason for us to just run off willy-nilly? Should we, for instance, after 9/11, have sat back, contemplated the reasons, looked at the results, and then decided maybe it was something that was worthwhile for them to do and they need their dignity?
Al-Qaeda needs their dignity to...
No, I didn't say that.
Yeah, you did. You said maybe if we look at the results of 9/11...
I'm saying, in the modern world, take into consideration shooting your enemy. How is that going to make him feel? Killing him and leaving him there, his children an orphan, his wife a widow. How does that make her feel when you shoot him simply because he did a terrorism thing?
All right, 1-800-449-8686. John Kerry, according to Margaret Gray at the Fleet Center in Boston, just the man we need as the new commander-in-chief. He's a man who in Vietnam was able to not only fight, but he could also assess and bring compassion to his opinion of the enemy. Maybe today isn't the day to fight. Maybe today is the day to let them capture that village because I can see their point of view too. Now, I am not a soldier, as I said, and maybe this is a new war, and maybe this is a new world, but it sounds to me like a recipe for chaos. But then, as I said, perhaps I'm not as informed. Margaret's there, and she heard Senator Kerry speaking this evening. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The eighth wonder of the world. Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
The philosophy of retreating with dignity, you mentioned John Kerry brought that up in his speech tonight. We're talking with Margaret Gray. What does that mean?
No, retreating with dignity, Phil, is something that I coined for my column tomorrow. It's something that I think John Kerry can give to us as a gift to the American people. The great powers all eclipse eventually. The United States has the opportunity, a wonderful opportunity, to walk out of Iraq with our heads held high, to bring ourselves to the table in Europe with our heads held high, and to say, you know what? We're wrong, and we do need to learn. John Kerry knows the dignity of being disgusted with yourself and changing your mind. When he did in Vietnam, in point of fact, win a Bronze Star and then got disgusted with himself because he realized that he won that Bronze Star by not taking into consideration the feelings of the enemy. And so he got disgusted. And it's what we call being disgusted with yourself in a positive way. And John Kerry is going to teach us that. I'm very excited about his speech tonight.
Okay, 1-800-449-8686. John Kerry teaching us to retreat with dignity. Here is David on the Phil Henry Show. David, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to make the point that we don't need to care how the enemy feels. They attacked us.
Well, what do you mean by that, they attacked us?
Well, 9/11, it was their attack on our country.
Yes, they did, but did they have reasons? Did they have their reasons? And I think future President Kerry, if I may call him that, will take into consideration, well, where are they coming from?
We don't need to consider that. They struck first. This is our land. There's no reason to consider their feelings at that point.
What about the fact that, they attacked our country? I mean, when he was in Vietnam, he took into consideration the feelings of the Vietnamese because he was in their country. What about our country?
But America really does belong to everyone, Phil. I think that's something you need to understand. It's not really our country. It belongs to the Arabs. It belongs to the others. You see, and so when they attacked us, they were attacking themselves. And John Kerry was disgusted with that because he realized that he caused it.
That type of president is weak, and that's not something the United States needs.
What do you say about the... It sounds weak, Margaret.
I wish you two could understand that this is actual strength. Know when to fight, and know, as John Kerry would say, know when to turn your patrol boat around and hide in the jungle for a few days.
All right.
I disagree.
Yeah, me too.
And that'll put our country in a real hole.
David, thank you very much.
Sure.
1-800-449-8686. When to attack and when to hide your patrol boat in the jungle for a few days sounds, if anything, he could be compromising the lives of his fellow soldiers.
Ah, I'm glad you brought that up, Phil, because John Kerry very clearly said in 1971 before the United States Senate that he had real misgivings about his fellow soldiers. He realized how wrong they were and how wrong he was for liking them and being their friend. And when he came back to the United States, he realized how disgusted not only he was with himself, but how disgusted he was with his fellow soldiers. But he changed his mind at the Pentagon that day. He wasn't disgusted with them anymore, and he wasn't really disgusted with himself, but he was disgusted with his medal. And so he threw his medal over the wall. And so what that means...
Well, wait a minute. What has that got to do with him hiding in the jungle?
Because at that time, he feels dignified disgust with his fellow soldiers.
But what about with himself for hiding?
No. Why would he be disgusted with trying to save himself and his crew?
You know, I know you're struggling to understand this, but I've been here in Boston for the entire week. I can understand how John works and feels. I've had a great time talking to him and members of his family.
All right, let me go over here, Bill. Hi, Bill, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I really appreciate you having this lady on because she's the best thing that George Bush has got going for us.
You should have been in Boston tonight, Bill.
Ma'am, I was 5 years in Vietnam, and thank God I didn't have to count on John Kerry to help me out.
Well, look, I'm not saying he wouldn't have come to your defense. He did when he saw...
No, he would hide behind a tree somewhere while we were getting shot.
No, only if it didn't make sense to attack.
Well, wait a minute.
Oh, okay. So we set out there shooting, and until he makes the decision to come and help us out, we're just left at the whims of whoever's there.
I understand your feeling, but...
Yeah, I have very deep feelings about
it. What about the enemy's feelings?
Well, they were the enemy, and remember that.
I understand that, but John Kerry, this is what makes him a unique man. He took into consideration how they might feel about it.
Wait.
Then in New York, when the enemy comes in and drives airplanes into the towers and things like that, we have to think about their feelings and hope that we're not prompting on them a little bit by saying, this is really a bad thing that you did.
See, if I may, Margaret, I understand that there are historic reasons for everything. And
yes, that's it exactly, Philip.
But wait a minute. I mean, just to say, because there are historic reasons that we just throw up our hands and we don't defend ourselves.
I'm not saying don't defend ourselves. I'm saying think about the consequences of defending yourself.
Think about the consequences of not defending yourself.
Well, at least with dignity, you can retreat, as John Kerry, I think, would have said tonight.
Who ever retreated in dignity?
I think there is a time when you can turn the patrol boat around, go up the river, take your shirt off.
When you turn the patrol boat around, you're running.
You're running to fight another day.
Yeah, you're running away.
To fight another day.
No.
He turned the patrol boat around on many occasions to go up into the jungle and get...
I've got a Purple Heart, too, and I got it the hard way.
Bill, you must have hit behind a tree or two in Vietnam.
No, as a matter of fact, I didn't. I was out there being a dumbass.
Well, and look what happened to you.
He's alive. The guy's alive. Anyway, Bill, thank you. 1-800-449-8686. Tom, go ahead. Well, hold on, Tom. I got to take a break. Margaret, I appeal to your... just to understand that you may not be making sense to a lot of people.
No, I understand that, Phil. And I'm trying very hard to make sense.
But to say that John Kerry, you know, there's a time to turn your patrol boat around and hide in the jungle for a few days sounds like retreat.
It's retreat and self-disgust with dignity. I want your listeners to be aware of that. That's what John Kerry's saying. Have good, honest self-disgust with dignity. Just listen to me. I've been here in Boston chatting to the folks. I know what's going on.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. John Kerry, as a commander-in-chief, would know when to retreat with dignity. The Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The epitome of radio. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Margaret Gray joins us from Boston, where the Democratic National Convention has adjourned, and the man who is the man of the hour is John Kerry. And we're talking, you're a big Kerry supporter. You definitely believe that he's the man of the hour. And
well, one of the reasons why I wanted to come on your program tonight, Phil, is to announce officially to the people listening to you, to all of the people who have read my column, and the people who have been following my reports rather eagerly this week, and I've gotten emails from so many of you, I want you to know I now officially support John Kerry, and if you've been wondering who to vote for and who you should throw your support behind, I'm now telling you the man is John Kerry. And
I just want to clarify before we go to another call. What does it mean retreating. What does it mean having dignified disgust with yourself?
I'll tell you what it means. John Kerry learned in Vietnam that going into battle means one of two things. You're going to get killed, or you're going to kill someone else. Now, who is that person you're going to kill? Have you taken into consideration how they feel? I think when it comes to going into combat, John Kerry assessed the situation. He took into consideration the feelings of the enemy, the feeling...
Well, wait a minute. If you're ordered into battle, and you have to go into battle, and you...
John Kerry wants us to have the dignity to tell our commanding officers when we feel like fighting and when we're scared. And there were many times that John Kerry was scared. There were many times that he turned his patrol boat around and went at about 45 knots back up the river, where he would take his shirt off, throw it on the deck, and just lay down and get some sun, wondering what happened, wondering why he felt the way he felt. I'll tell you why he felt the way he felt. Because he was destined to be a president who would listen to all sides. That's why in Vietnam, it was far better for John Kerry to anchor in a lagoon and have a couple of beers than, I don't know, commit yourself...
Anchor in a lagoon and have a couple of beers.
You make that a negative, Phil.
Well, I think to the American people it might come across as a little bit negative.
Well, there's an old song called The Get...
Well, hold on. I want to get a call, and you can tell me about that. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Ellen. Ellen, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yes, I'd like to answer this lady. First of all, there are 200 fellow servicemen who wrote a letter to the media, which was never published, that they don't think that Mr. Kerry is suitable to be commander-in-chief. That's number one. Number two, I don't know about that.
I didn't read that.
Excuse me, I'm talking now. And I want to say that he himself, a couple of years ago, said, don't vote for me unless you believe me that there are weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. He claimed that himself, the same thing that President Bush said.
Well,
excuse me, I'm not finished yet. He has been on every issue. If Mr. Kerry were to be in command in the Second World War, we'd be all speaking German now in America and in the world.
Well, what are
this
you speaking?
This is nonsense
well,
that you say he's deciding whether or not to fight.
Either you're going to win or you forget it and go home and do what he did. John Kerry
denounce
is a man
the war,
who...
Denounce his fellow servicemen. Shame on
are
him.
You done?
He's a liar.
Are you done?
And he's beautifully presented there.
Are you done?
He gives good speeches, but that's all.
All right, now you're going to listen to me, Helga.
What does that Helga crack mean?
Not Helga.
Well,
I'm not Helga. My name is Ellen.
Well, what's with the German accent?
But so what?
Aha! So you are German.
I'm just telling you that I'm certainly not for having America speak German. Mr. Kerry's attitude would have caused that.
I don't know where the American colonel is hiding.
What?
Nothing. Something I saw in a war movie.
No, whatever you're saying is full of baloney.
Oh, baloney.
Mr. Kerry is a liar.
He's
been on two issues, on every issue on two sides.
He's very dignified.
Yes, he's dignified. He talks very well. I agree with that.
He's dignified as he takes both sides.
The performance was beautiful. Ready for Broadway.
Thank you very much, Ellen.
But not to be chief of our country.
Ellen, sprechen die Lederhosen?
What do you say?
What do you mean, do you speak Lederhosen?
Oh, I didn't know that's what that meant.
What insult
is that? She said Sprechen die Lederhosen.
You may not like it, but America is full of Germans. Did you know that? There used to be the
major minority
in this country.
Well, as soon as the FBI finds out, when the FBI finds out, it won't be full of Germans. But I can tell you...
This isn't World War II any longer. There are a great many German immigrants here. One of them happens to be my grandmother-in-law.
Your grandmother-in-law? Well, isn't that ducky for you? While the rest of us sit and sweat in a cellar... Your in-laws parade up and down the street in boots.
I don't think you spread any words, madam.
I can tell you this, Ellen. When John Kerry was in battle in Vietnam, he would sit and have a beer in a lagoon rather than go and risk the bad feelings of the Viet Cong.
I bet you he did.
You know what? You're not making him sound too good here. Ellen, thank you very much.
How am I not making him sound good?
Thank you very much, ma'am. What do you mean he'd sit and have a beer in a lagoon while he took into a consideration the feelings of the Viet Cong? We need a commander-in-chief. I heard him speak tonight saying that you can't take him for granted, that he would respond with a great deal of force. And
yes, after he assesses the situation. We have to go through a period. If we get attacked, Phil, we must go through a period first of understanding how much we deserve it.
then we can attack. We didn't do that after 9/11. We went right out and attacked. And we didn't have the common decency, and as I say, the dignified self-disgust to sit and understand with full knowledge and depression how much we deserved 9/11. When we can finally do that, Phil, we can finally know what it is to be a nation under John Kerry.
All right, let me go over here to Hannah. Hannah, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
How could anybody say we deserved 9/11?
We're
going to have a president who's going to say we deserve 9/11. What if we need that commission for to assess blame if we deserve 9/11? Is that what he's going to do in the White House?
He's going to be in the White House. John Kerry will have the dignity to be disgusted with himself.
He should be disgusted with himself.
But he's also
Mr. Kerry is not a man. If he, while other people were braving fire in the Viet Cong, he was in, on a lagoon drinking beer. Is that what he's going to do in the White House?
Hannah, what I'm trying to say, Hannah, John Kerry is compassionate enough to be not only disgusted with himself.
Oh, he's compassionate enough to know how to run away from battle with dignity.
See, that's what you're saying.
Drinking beer in the lagoon while his fellow soldiers are braving fire.
No. He didn't do that. Yes, of course he went into battle, but there were times when he felt sorry for the
soldier disobeying orders. If he was doing that, and the soldier's job is to obey orders.
What about if he felt sorry for the Viet Cong?
Excuse me. If the United States had sat back to say why the Japanese attacked us in Pearl Harbor, we'd be speaking Japanese, German,
God.
And we wouldn't be insulting people the way you did.
World War II veterans. You kill me. Everything's about the world, the Second World War.
What about the Vietnam? I have friends who were conscientious objectors in Vietnam, but they didn't go there and help the Viet Cong or run away from battle. And they wouldn't do it in the White House either. How can we have a man in the White House who, if somebody attacks us, he's going to sit back and call 25,000 people in and say, what do you think they wanted from us? Wasn't it enough that 3,000 people got killed there who did nothing but go to work that day?
Absolutely.
I have to think
we
about
should
why.
Have attacked Al Qaeda. Yes, we should have. But first we have to sit there with our fingers locked in within each other, sit on the edge of a bed and stare at the floor and feel depressed about what we did to deserve it. Yes.
What do you mean?
We did nothing to deserve it. We were attacked by a band of Muslim idiots.
Can I tell you something? Before I flew to Boston, you know what I did? I watched Apocalypse Now. I watched to see what my John F. Kerry went through in Vietnam.
Really? John F. Kerry and thousands of other American soldiers who fought with bravery and earned the things they got. John F. Kerry is a coward, and he's a liar, and he's been on two sides of every single position there is. If this man's going to sit back and assess, he's going to assess their feelings about us. Isn't it enough to know that 3,000 people got killed, innocent people who went to work that day?
I want to be clear. You'd begrudge a man a cold beer in a lagoon on a hot day.
Yes, you're right, I do.
Oh, come on, in the middle of a freaking battle?
Imagine.
You know, the things you're saying about John Kerry, you want to go?
My
God. You don't think it's safe, you want to go? You know what that means, don't you?
I can say one thing about John Kerry.
You want to throw down?
He's no president. He's not going to be a president.
Hannah, thank you very much for your call. Begrudging a man a cold beer in a lagoon on a hot day, that's one thing. But when in the middle of a war... Sarah, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
If I had lost any child to war and had a soldier who was supposed to back us all up going off to rest under a tree to think about the battle, why I'm losing my child because I don't have a backup because these soldiers are not following orders, I'd be most upset.
Well, why didn't your child go off to think under a tree? You see, this is what I mean.
If everybody went off to sit under a tree, where would we be?
But that's what John Kerry wants us to do.
Oh, isn't that wonderful that that's what he wants while lives are being lost? When you're in the military, when you join the military, you follow orders. You trust your commander. You don't decide whether or not you're going to do something or not. In the meantime, you don't have the backup that you need, so lives are being lost by a few.
Well, that was the way...
Your backup men are sitting and contemplating that they don't like something.
Look, I don't disagree with you, but what I'm saying is, at one time, yes, that's what
we
had to do.
Man here.
But if John Kerry is our commander-in-chief, he'll give soldiers the option to either go into battle or
to
bust out an MRE.
Man. Why don't you admit that? Anybody that has to contemplate if you join the military,
you're pissing me off now. You know what you're really making? You're tightening my jaws now. I'll tell you something.
You've never been in the military, apparently. You probably haven't never had anyone in the military.
John Kerry sat in that lagoon and sipped that gross life and dreamed of getting anywhere. Dreamed of getting all the way to the big White House.
You had Curry on your side.
Curry? His name's Kerry.
Excuse me, Curry. It doesn't make much difference. The man's weak.
Sarah.
Why don't you admit he's a weak weak man.
Mr. Henry, may I
wouldn't want him.
All right, hold on, Sarah.
Let Margaret
respond.
Sarah, John Kerry sat in that lagoon having a cold beer and thinking of getting out, getting anywhere, getting all the way to the White House.
Isn't that wonderful?
And one day his dream came true. If he engaged in battle that
being
day.
Shot
so
at.
In other words, John Kerry goes into battle, winds up with a foot in, maybe just a foot in a body bag, and he doesn't run for president. Thanks a lot, Sarah.
Thank you.
Well, whatever. Sarah, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686. We have time for one more call. I want to ask you, the things you're saying are making less and less sense. The thing...
Bill, you should be in Boston. You should be in Boston to see what's happened here. And you should read John Kerry's website.
Well, maybe if I read his website, it would make more sense than you telling me about him having a cold beer in a lagoon and dreaming about getting out, getting anywhere.
What's wrong with sitting under a tree in a lagoon with a red stripe in your hand and a piece of straw hanging out of your mouth and thinking, do I really want to be doing this? What's wrong with that?
Nothing's wrong with that. Except for the fact that you're sworn to duty. It's a life and death situation.
Bill, everything is life and death. Everything that...
Oh, don't start philosophizing with me. I know everything's life and death. I know, but in that situation, literally, men's lives depend on him.
And his life depends on them. And with his resignation the purity of his self-disgust cannot be discounted. As he sat there sucking on a red stripe, he thought to himself, I'd like to get out. I'd like to get anywhere. All the way to the FBI, maybe. But no, the sticky, tired fumblings in the back of the cockpit there of the patrol boat with some guy out of the South Bronx fumbling and...
All right. Jerry, go ahead.
Okay, lady. In combat, you do not retreat. You do not go back in the lagoon and have a couple of beers. You do not retreat from a firefight on your own say-so. When your commanders tell you, you have to go take this area or you have to go clear this village, you do not sit down and have a TTK like you're saying it. You go in there and do it. First of all, he's a coward.
Well, that's a very harsh word.
He was in the States throwing his medals.
He threw his medals over the fence because he suddenly realized that he was disgusted with himself. Then he changed his mind.
All right, Jerry, you okay? We lost Jerry, who is calling us from Corpus Christi. He was probably on a cell phone. But I can certainly understand. He sounds like a soldier, of a veteran soldier. And
Phil.
No, wait a minute. We're talking to soldiers.
Phil. Let me sing a song that I think tells the story of John Kerry. I've lived a life that's full. I've traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this, Phil. I did it their way. For what is a man?
You got an accordion player there or something?
Turn it off, Eddie. Eddie, I don't need the accordion now, you jackass. I was going to do it for the gambler. I don't need the accordion for my way. I was going to do the gambler, Phil, because I think that's John Kerry's real theme song. You've got to know when to hold up. Well, forget it. I'm pissed off.
All right, well, I'm sorry.
No, you really put me in a bad mood. You really did. Just challenging me the way you did.
All right, I'm sorry, but I don't think what you're saying makes a lot of sense.
Well, you know something? You're bald.
I'm rapping to the woman about John Kerry's new vision for America. Dignity with self-disgust. It's the Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Margaret will also be joining us next hour, a little flashback of a report she gave us this week, earlier this week, and our mailbag as we continue on The Phil Henry Show.
The Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Talk Radio's prodigal son. The Phil Henry Show is back.
All right, next hour we got our mailbag coming up. Margaret Gray joins us with a flashback from some of her earlier reports this week. It's always been a It's always been a treat to have Margaret on. I can't say that it's going to continue to be that, because she's starting to really tense me up with some of her baloney. So John Kerry is the official nominee, and let the they got to nominate Bush though, don't they? Is there anybody challenging him? The guy's like the incumbent. Somebody, you know, I think I could do better. Screw this, Bush. You messed this whole thing up. I'm running for president as a Republican, and I'm going to kick ass. Thank you, Senator McCain, but I...
You had to let him know.
Well, the paper bag on your head, you know, might have helped a little, but...
You guys are all a bunch of sissies. I'm going to campaign on thermonuclear war, first strike. That's my philosophy. And this guy, Kerry and Bush, both, man, those guys can go and pick flowers together. Bunch of pansies.
Ought to be a really interesting campaign. I heard Kerry say this tonight. He wants the whole thing to be nice and clean. Come out with the gloves on. Marquise, the Queensberry rules. No hitting under the belt. No kidney shots. No rabbit punches, you know. Keep it straight. Keep it beautiful. Keep it alive. Keep it gay. Keep it, you know, keep it real, baby. So we'll see whether the cats do it or not, man. I'd like to hear. Wouldn't it be cool to have a campaign where they're just talking about the stuff that's going on? Forget about whether a cat was in the Vietnam or he didn't, or he's in the National Guard. He did this, did that. I want to know what this guy's talking about, man. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if I could believe everything Kerry's saying, I'd vote for him. If I could believe everything Bush is saying, I'd vote for him. I'm going to vote for both of them. I'm registering in two separate districts, and I'm voting for both of them. Talk about your vote canceling itself out. And then I'm going to go have a red stripe sitting on a boat in a lagoon. Phil Hendry Show coming up, the mailbag, and a whole bunch of other stuff. Be right back.
1-800-449-8686. The world famous Phil Hendry. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
You know, I kind of like Senator Kerry's message tonight, which is we can do better. Which is sort of like saying, we're not doing bad, but we can do a little better. That'd be cool if a guy got up in front of hundreds of delegates there in their pig masks and their little straw hats and their banners and their pins, their donkey pins, and say, that'd been a bad job, I'm not done, don't get me wrong. President's doing okay, but I just, you know, there's a few things I'd fix. It's good, it just isn't perfect. That would be my campaign slogan if I ran for president. We ought to be perfect, why aren't we? What if everything got so good, we got no problems with the economy, we got no problems with foreign invaders, we have, everything is solid, and so the campaign slogan would be, spiritually, how are you doing? What are your morals like? I am campaigning on less self-abuse. Come on, knock it off, will you? By the year 2050, no more of that. No more of that. It's against the Bible anyway. Also, no more cigarette smoking and none of that drinking after 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, especially with the blue laws. How about a cat running on prohibition again? Boy, now that'd be a big winner, huh? Go ahead, try and roll that one out again. No booze. What do you think, huh? Nobody's thought about it since 1919. I want to bring that one up. Yeah, okay, man, you're a real party animal, aren't you? Well, I can have it. Not that I can't have a good time. All these little special interest parties crack me up. Like there's a party that wants, that the only thing they want, legalized weed, right? So what are you, we are here, we have been in existence since 1941, and we have been trying to get marijuana legalized since 1941. Well, you aren't doing a very good job, are you? What are you knocking me or something? Well, what the hell are you talking about? You've been around for like 60 freaking years and you haven't been able to do it yet? It's just a fascist police state, man. I can't get that weed legalized, and that's all. Well, what about, so you know, like, you know, defense or things like, I don't have any opinion on that. What are you talking about? So I'm going to elect you, man. We got free weed, and then what? Well, then you're on your own. I'll just sit in the White House, blast up, and hope for the best. Hope for the best. That's another good campaign slogan. Elect me and pray. Oh, I'm Senator Henry, and I'm running on hope for the best. And tell us about hope for the best, Senator Henry. Well, you just sit around, you have yourself a red stripe in a lagoon, and you just pray that nothing happens. It's what I call permanent vacation, man. You know, I don't want a whole lot of trouble. I got a bunch of senators coming in here, pounding their fist on the desk. They got all the pork barrel stuff. Forget it. I'll get to it when I get to it. That's my campaign slogan for 2004. We'll get to it when we get to it, huh? Take a freaking chill. And then I'd have, oh my God, James Taylor has come out. He's on stage for John. Now that's another guy that I'd run for president, James Taylor. Look at him. See, he's bald and he grows his hair long. How come he looks good and I look like Bozo? I'm telling you that this is what we're going to, you know, as soon as we get everything figured out, because these guys that are running for president, man, they got it all. They got the plan, and it's going to be perfect, man. Just elect me, the whole thing is going to come down to, it's just going to come down to, oh, you know, a couple of little painless taxes, and who the hell knows? It's going to be fine. We can do better, and we will do better, so long as you keep electing me president. Give me 50 years, and I'll get the whole thing straight. We'll roll back that amendment that says you can only run for like two terms. I'm John Kerry. Give me 116 years and we'll get it going. The thing of it is, these guys go, yeah, man, I got it. I got it just where I want it. Now you got to get me in for another 4 years. Wait a minute. I elected you for four, man. How come I got to do another four? Because I don't have everything done yet. Don't have it all done yet. I would have done it all, but those guys kept me from doing it. So I'm going to need a third term, if you don't mind. All right, our news this hour on The Phil Henry Show, brought to you by The Phil Henry Show website. Go to www.philhenryshow.com and you get all of our archived comedy. It's there for your perusal, and with a backstage pass, you can log on anytime you want and check it out, but you have to have a backstage pass. The good news, $6.95 a month. The bad news, you still have to pay it. The bad news is this. Actually, the good news is I don't give a crap what you download off of my site as soon as you pay up. Because I know there's no way I can keep my stuff from going on all them listening posts and all those bogus websites and all those bootleg sites. So the way I figure, I'll get you guys once, okay? Boom, I hit you once with a backstage pass, and at least I'm getting a few dollars for the stuff. Go to www.philhenryshow.com. Now, two stories, both of them very much alike, obviously, and one is Lacey Peterson, and the other is this poor hawking case, and I know I keep asking the question, it's spelled hacking. Now get this, these cops in this hacking case have got, well, they had a lot of circumstantial evidence, but they also have some physical evidence now. They've got some blood, they got a knife, they got a clump of hair, they've got some, I don't know if they don't have actual eyewitnesses to the murder, but they've got some eyewitness statements as to where he was and what he was doing at the time that he was alleged to have been doing something else, right? And things are stacking up against this nut, this Lori Hocking, this Mark Hacking guy, right? Now, the other case, Scott Peterson, where Garagos is dog paddling every day to try to keep the scent off of his boy and onto, guess who? The cops. So what we got going on here, and it started at least in my memory, it started with the O.J. case, and maybe it's been going on a lot longer, but I guess it's come to the public's attention. Here's how you defend a murder case. The cops screwed up the investigation. Now, your guy, man, is caught red-handed with a knife. There's blood dripping off of it. Yeah, but you guys didn't bag the knife right. You didn't test the blood right. You didn't handcuff him. You didn't read him his rights. You didn't shave his head. You didn't pat him down. You didn't powder his butt and send him to bed in a diaper. You didn't let him watch Wheel of Fortune. There's all kinds of ways that the coppers screwed this up. So, case dismissed, man. I got to toss this on a technicality. That's the angle that Garagos has taken. It's the angle that this other attorney is going to take. He's already talking about how the coppers, well, I don't know whether or not they're investigating this thing properly. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, are they obtaining evidence illegally? Have they got a court order for this? Have they got a search warrant for that? They have a municipal landfill. They're looking for clues to the missing 27-year-old woman, and they're following up on a tip of a neighbor who said someone may have used his plastic trash barrel to dispose of a body. Somebody might have used his plastic trash barrel to dispose of a body. How do you figure? I don't know. I got a sense. Well, why do you think it was a body? I don't know.
Is there blood?
No, no.
Is there hair? Is there clothing? Is there anything in there?
No, I just had a dream.
You had a dream. Thank you, Gene Dixon. Sources close to the case said there was some evidence of a struggle, but no indication that it was a chaotic situation. Though there were drops of blood found inside the apartment, there was no evidence that any blood had been cleaned up. Let me tell you something. If you don't get this blood evidence cleaned up properly, oh, man, those lawyers have a field day. Oh, there's blood, and we have the DNA of the woman. It's on the knife, and he was holding it.
Really?
Yeah. All right. Now, how do you know?
Because we got it off the knife. How did you get it off the knife?
Well, we took it off the... What, are you going to break my balls over that?
Yes, I am.
Did you conduct test A, B, or C on it? Did you put in the right kind of solution when you formulated the test? Was it done in Laboratory 6, or was it done over here at Area 51? How did you do it? And if you didn't do it right, then you're going to have to go back and do it right. And, you know, if you go back and do it right, that means that the blood sample gets smaller. And if the blood sample gets smaller, it gets even more contaminated. You know what, Your Honor? This whole thing is a cluster you-know-what.
You're right. Case dismissed.
I mean, that's what a good lawyer does now. Now, is it wrong or is it right? Well, if he's doing it according to the law, it's right. It's right. What's wrong with defending your client using everything at your disposal? Well, these lawyers, Phil, are dirtbags. They know the guy's guilty. I'm not willing to comment on that either way. But the fact of the matter is that if the guy uses what's at his disposal in terms of the law, even if the guy's a cold-blooded axe murderer, the cat's off. I mean, the law says his case gets tossed. Now, who's to blame for this? I always put it back on us, but people don't like to hear that. They want it to, like, be Bush or somebody. So I'm going to blame Bush for the whole thing. But I will say one thing. You know, there comes a point where you have to decide, what's important here, man? Do we want to get criminals off the street and stick them in the electric chair or shoot them full of the juice or drop a pill on them? Or are we going to keep playing this game with technicalities on how these guys get to walk because somebody, you know, somebody said something or did something or didn't do something or didn't bag something or didn't wrap something or didn't follow up a lead or didn't follow up strenuously enough on a phone call from an old lady who's lonely and thinks that her attic's haunted. I mean, we didn't, you know, that lady said she saw somebody. She said she saw a man in a hood. She said she saw a giggling man with a pointed red nose and he was flying on a reindeer. Well, what are you talking? Well, you should check that out. So, obviously, we're rocking a hard place because we have such a value of personal right in this country. It's profound, and it's something that our country is based upon. But in the meantime, oh my God, man, there's a cat down in Miami playing golf that'll tell you something else. I bet you this hacking guy walks, and I bet you this, who is it? Peterson. I bet you they walk, and I bet you the three of them are seen out here on the links in about 6 months. Hacking, Peterson, and OJ, having themselves a red stripe in a lagoon. And I paid it. You know, we ought to have a superstar competition of dismissed cases. Defendants who were up for murder and walked. It'll be celebrity superstar, all of them on bicycles and in canoes. You know, they'll have a dog paddling competition, followed by the team tennis, followed by, who knows what, 100-meter dash, followed by a hockey game, and they'll become celebrities overnight. You'll have Mark Hacking with his own talk show. OJ will get back on TV. There's no doubt in my mind that he'll be back on the tube. He won't be selling cars. He won't necessarily be doing, for instance, sports, but I think he'll probably get his gig back in a broadcast booth someplace. Like maybe in Denmark.
Das ist unerkannter OJ. Mir kannst du nicht hier so eine. Das hat ein großes Geld.
Yeah.
Das ist unerkannter.
This is the Danish Football League. I don't know, but his life is large. Our mailbag is next. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
I just talked to my wife. She's in Chicago, and she, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, she's visiting a girlfriend there, and they're just going to have a girlfriend weekend because that's where her girlfriend's from. And anyway, she's having a great time. She went to a place called the Chop House in Chicago that's owned by a baseball umpire named Marty Something, is what she said to me.
I said, now, wait a minute. I know a baseball umpire named Marty. A baseball umpire's a name, Marty. There's got to be... What's his name? Marty... Marty. Marty Marty? Find out who that guy is. He owns the Chop House in Chicago. And, man, right now my mouth's watering. Just thinking of Chop House in Chicago. That means steaks, don't it? God, I could use one of those. Big, red, juicy slab of meat. And plenty of colon cancer to go with that. Thank you. All right, anyway, it's time now for our mailbag on the Phil Henry Show. And this comes to us from Don Morris, writing to us from Israel. Greetings from Israel, Phil. I'm a semi-retired university professor from Cal Poly Pomona, who enjoys your show. I truly appreciate your creativity and kept in stitches every day. Thank goodness for technology. 10,000 miles away from California, and I'm entertained by Phil. I also truly appreciate Phil's political views. Please continue reporting the truth in your style. People are listening and learning. Many thanks, Don Morris, Ph.D. I will continue in my style, sir. Fake voices fooling people into thinking they're real. Hey, Phil, I'm wondering about a specific piece that must have aired 4 or 5 years ago on your show. I wonder if it's on one of the best of CDs. It was before Christmas, and Bobby Dooley was on talking about a black family that moved to the neighborhood, and they were going to make them feel welcome by having a theme for the block or neighborhood, a Gone with the Wind Kwanzaa. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's an old one. And Bobby would dress like Scarlett O'Hara, and the black family could dress like slaves. My daughter and I still talk about that episode. Thanks so much, David Duke. I'm kidding. It's from Leanne Smith Travzer. She's got one of them little hyphenated things. Leanne Smith Travzer. And whatever. Her husband is Bob Travzer, I think. Dear Phil, I was in the Army for 7 years, a combat MOS. Jesus, I don't know what that means. What is MOS? I was in the Army for 7 years, a combat mouse. How about that? How do you think we feel when we hear these blanks start whining and crying? And yeah, it is the recruiting. Why should you be offered school and whatnot? Either you want to serve and fight or you don't. Real soldiers aren't made, Phil. They're born. By the way, the great George C. Scott imitation was fantastic. Best wishes, Zeltko, Phoenix. Zeltko, I think you're learning flying down there, man. I think you're flying and you ain't landing. Zeltko? And you were a combat mouse? What the hell, man? Is that the U.S. Army or the... That sounds like the Canadian Army to me. Hey, Phil, I was listening to the show, and you said that George Bush did not lie about the Iraq War. Wrong. Please read this and think. When a bully goes into a bar, he's looking for a fight. He looks around for someone that he doesn't like the look of. Then he will wait for the victim, does something that looks weird or something, or if he hears a rumor about the person he does not like, he will go and start the fight, pretending that the fight is over something the victim said or did. Here is the important part. The bully is a liar, and so is George Bush. Lisa. Hey, Lisa. Wrong. Instead of coming up with funny little nursery rhymes, why don't you read a little bit of history? In fact, why don't you read the 9/11 Commission, Russian intelligence, MI6? Oh, forget it. What difference does it make, man? Go vote for Kerry. It's gonna be a great world, man. He'll get us out of Iraq. You just wait and see. Hey, Phil, last week I had relatives from Cottonwood, California. Sincerely, Kevin Dill. No, I'm kidding. He says, hey, Phil, last week I had relatives from Cottonwood, California visiting, and at about 10, we decided to play the PlayStation Groove Eye toy dance thing. I challenged my sister to a dance-off, and she chose I Will Survive as the tune. I did my best Steve Bozell high kick, and later that night ended up at Kaiser Critical Care with pericarditis and an inflamed chest wall. He did a Steve Bozell high kick? Phil, the funniest line ever. Now the jackrabbit will at that moment burst into flames. Now you got a flaming rabbit that's just hauling ass and setting everything on fire, okay? Classic. The bit had me on the floor literally. I fell out of my chair laughing when you said, as Jeff, it does, man. If it's that dry and the bunny's fur touches it off, you get acres of trees up in flames before you can say, hey, time for another bong hit. Thanks, Tay. Right, that's our mailbag. Marty Foster is the umpire that owns the Chop House. Well, you know what we could do? We could look up Chop House in Chicago and find out how the owner is on the website. There ain't no Chop House website? There ain't no Marty? Honey, It was some creep trying to pick you up, I think. Some bum who said, hey, I'm the owner of the restaurant. As far as George Bush being a liar, I'm done. You guys believe whatever you want. It's okay with me. I'm turning over a new leaf. I have said all I can say about it. I can't say anything more. You know, if you want to believe the guy's a liar, then he's a liar. He's just a rotten, dirty liar. And, oh, yeah, he's a bully, too. You're right. And, hey, while I'm on the subject, Saddam Hussein, it's in the news today, has a prostate infection or something, and they want him to have an exam to make sure he doesn't have cancer, and they're just really taking as much care of him as they can, but I suspect that it may not be enough. There may be abuse. And I would suggest, Lisa, that after you get done checking out who the bully is, man, you might want to find out whether the Red Cross is checking in on Saddam, and is he as comfortable as he can be? Is he getting warm blankets? Is he got enough water? Is there enough beer in the icebox? Does he have that Lipton cup of soup, man? God, the last thing we need is reports of more abuse in the prisons in Iraq. Am I agreed with that or not, huh? Can I get a witness on? All right. Let's make sure old Saddam's feeling comfy. 1-800-449-8686, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
Hey, John Kerry and John Edwards are enjoying a fireworks display in Boston right now, the likes of which I don't think anybody has ever seen in the history of the world. I mean, not even in Vietnam did he ever see so much going on with such intensity up in the sky that featured lights, explosions, and stuff falling to the ground on fire, as he's seeing right now there in Boston. But they're looking, man, that fireworks display they got going there puts to shame the one we have up at the beach. Why don't you guys get it together and have something like this? They got about 86 million pounds of ordnance. You know, Kerry, I tell you what, this is just an idea. If we use half of the stuff you're blasting off over the Boston Harbor right now in Iraq, hell, we could wrap this thing up tomorrow. But I guess not. John Kerry announced today that he's going to have instituted almost immediately counseling and analysis, basically outpatient therapy for people who are just so disillusioned at being lied to by President Bush, people who feel raped, people who feel emotionally fondled by President Bush for lying to them, so that when he becomes president, we can all go and hold the hand of someone who has, you know, an office with incense burning and, hi, I'm Susie. I have my MFCC. Come on in. What's that crystal doing on the table?
Oh, it's just something I like. So, let's talk about yourself. I'm a Jungian, but I'm also a Freudian. I do believe in Adler, but I also have a thing for Snow White. Now, I am not a doctor. I know just enough therapy to drive you insane. In fact, by the time I'm done with it, you'll probably want to go out and fire a weapon off in a Costco. But I do want to say,
well, I feel raped by President Bush. He lied to me.
Did he lie to you? Why, that bastard. You have every right in the world to feel victimized.
Yes, I do. And I'd like to do something about it. I need to
get it out. Get it all out. Pour out the disgust and the self-loathing. Because in many ways you feel guilty, don't you?
Yes, I believed him. Well, we're all victims here. That bastard Bush. I know, we can put George Bush up on a sex offender's website. How about that? President Bush wanted for emotionally fondling all of us, lying to us and victimizing us, making us trust him. And then what did he do? He turned around and put his hand down his shorts. Put him right up there, man, at the top of the list as far as I'm concerned. The way I'm telling you, the way I've seen my fellow Americans suffer at the hands of this perv. If it ain't him, it's Forehead Boy. They're still blasting these fireworks off. I ain't kidding you. Kerry now has crawled under a desk. He said, that's great. It's starting to remind me of some things I'd rather forget. Yeah, but you were having a beer in a lagoon. When did you see any of this stuff? Well, in a movie. I got home and I saw Platoon. That's when the real bad stuff started happening. All right, 1-800-449-8686 is the Phil Henry Show, and we have a flashback. Margaret was with us earlier in the week and offered an opinion that was rather interesting. The Democratic Party is fully expecting, or has traditionally fully expected, the black vote. However, this year, good news, it won't be needed, so all you black people can stay home. You know that you're expected to vote Democrat, but this year, we don't need you, so don't vote at all.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
Thank you. Yes. I came up and after watching the convention, turned on the radio, and I am appalled. I cannot believe the comments that you have made. You have, embarrassed that you even say you're a Democrat. You don't need the black people. I mean, are they like, they're like animals now that you don't need to let them? But so now the Democrats have let them fly first class. Let them have cable. We've let them have a hand up. I have lived in the black community, married to a black man for over 35 years. I have children that are biracial. All our friends are in the very higher upper economic, making 70, 80, 90 to 150,000 a year.
Well,
we have good black people. Did you not listen? Did you not even hear the young senator from Illinois on the stage tonight?
Yes, I heard him.
And you're going to tell me that people are still the slaves that we've let loose, and we're going to net, you know, we want to give them. And besides, as far as the checks and the handouts, the social agencies that I've worked in, those lines are just as full of white folks as they are with black folks.
Well, that's
need a handout or a hand up.
Exactly.
It's not a racial issue. It's an economic issue.
Ms. Gray, what is your response?
It's not a racial issue.
I want to say one thing. First of all, I didn't say we let them loose of slavery. And the young black man that was speaking this evening...
We let them fly first class on the plane.
Well, they can fly first class.
Cable TV. We don't let them do anything. They pay for those first class fares.
But they didn't have the right to buy cable TV until the Democrats came along. That's all I'm saying.
You're a racist and you're...
Oh, my God. How long have you been a Democrat? How long have you been a Democrat?
After Teresa Carey tonight... spoke of living in South Africa and apartheid and how she was it was segregated then and how she is so proud that we have an America that's integrated now, you have taken us back to segregation.
No, I am not. First of all, I think Teresa Carey is a wonderful...
Hold on for a minute. Hold on. We're not having a conversation. Hey,
tonight.
Becky, hold on. We're not having a conversation here, ladies. There has to be a give and take.
Well, she's been motor-mouthing until she got... What do you want me to do?
Go ahead and make your response.
First of all, Teresa Carey, yes, she did live in South Africa, and I think it was wonderful of her to do that, to live in proximity to blacks. And I think you should try it. Secondly, many of the
I do, believe me.
You do?
I do live in very... Did you not hear me say that I have lived in the black community?
I was trying to be heard.
For 35 years.
Are you black?
I've lived in the black community
for
35 years.
Well, then why can't you just say you're black?
I'm not. I'm white.
I don't understand. You live in the black community, but you're white.
I'm white. I am married to a black man, and I have been for over 35 years.
Well, that's unusual, but anyway.
Oh, it's unusual?
It's a little unusual. Yes, I'm not putting you down for it. It's just unusual.
Well, it's an interracial marriage.
You know what I think is very wrong is that the Democratic Party, for the first time, doesn't have to simply be the African Democratic Party. It can be the whole Democratic Party, and this lady's upset.
No, it's because you are trying to now exclude the black people. You wanted to use them to get so that you could get what you wanted.
Well, that's what we did as Democrats.
And now you're saying we don't need to. So, you know, what I would like to do is see the majority of them vote Republican.
Well, it's not going to happen. You know as well as I do that's going to happen. You know, the nuns will go ice skating with the devil before that happens. You know that as well as I do.
Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
Go ahead, Jeff. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Oh, yeah, Phil. I don't know if you saw the current... Teresa Harry's from Africa.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What?
Did you see the convention tonight?
I watched part of it, yes, sir.
Okay. Teresa Heinz is African.
Teresa Heinz is an African?
Yes, sir.
Well, she was born.
Yeah, no, I wanted to point it out to your listeners that she was born in in Zambia, I think. Or
Mozambique.
In Mozambique, yeah. That's a portion of Africa that I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I could be very radically wrong, is the island off the coast.
No, that's Madagascar. Mozambique is, I believe, in the interior of the... It's on the continent.
Okay. Well, the thing that needs to be pointed out here is, and I don't know if the Election Commission can look into it or not, but the Democrats might have a problem because she's technically coming out of Africa. And that's technically could be a problem for the Democratic ticket. Because
why?
Because she comes from Africa.
What difference does that make, sir?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, the Constitution of the United States says that you would have to be president.
No, to be president, you need to be born in the United States. It doesn't say anything about the First Lady.
No, I think it does.
No, it doesn't.
I believe that it does. I think you have to come from here.
What, to be First Lady?
Well, what do you mean First Lady?
Married to the President.
Okay, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, good. Okay, great. So we're on the same page, man, about Theresa Heintz, yeah?
Yeah, and she comes from the continent of Africa. She comes from the darkest continent.
Whatever, she comes from the darkest... What is this, Indiana Jones? You gotta tell me next thing, you gotta tell me she comes from the Belgian Congo, huh?
Well, if she does, that's pretty... I'm sure, yeah. Hi, I'm the First Lady. I'm from the Belgian Congo. What's that about?
What difference does it make, Jack? You don't have to be...
Look, what if John Kerry dies in office and John Edwards is out of town? Don't she take over?
You know...
Hey, man, answer my question, Mr. Henry. Are you avoiding the point?
Hey, Jack... I don't even want to answer your question.
Look, okay, when Clinton was president, and who was the vice president when Clinton was president?
Al Gore.
Okay, what if he was out of town?
Then the president of the Speaker of the House is the next in line. What do you mean if he's out of town? What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. I thought it was the First Lady. Didn't Hillary Clinton, they all said she was running everything and all that.
Oh, get out of here, you jackball.
One other thing?
What?
My name's Jeff, not Jack.
Thank you. Yeah, man. I think it's technically wrong for the First Lady to be, you know, she's got to be, she's from Africa. Yeah, no, Theresa Heintz was born in Mozambique. And then she was raised in South Africa, or lived in South Africa, and then moved to the United States, where she met Senator John Heintz in 1966, was married to him for... 20 plus years, and then he was killed in a plane crash, and then she met Senator Kerry, and now she is basically funding his, I mean, they're very happy together. What?
I just want to ask another question.
What?
Okay, does she look black to you or what?
She don't have to be black, man, to be born in Mozambique.
Well, what kind of sense does that make?
She could be the daughter of some European immigrants. I don't know. Maybe she is black. Maybe she's got some black blood. I don't know.
Well, shouldn't that come out in some kind of a hearing?
Yeah, okay, man. Let's have a hearing into whether she's black.
Okay, forget it.
Yeah, okay. Can we impanel a hearing, a Senate investigation? Maybe a commission. It'll be called the Theresa Heintz Is She Black Commission. And we'll look into the whole, the genealogy of the chick and whatever. 1-800-449-8686. Hey, how come it's light out with Greta Van Susteren on TV right now? She's sitting on the roof of a building somewhere, and the sun's shining. Now, all over America, it's dark. Is this a tape? Oh, my God, they wouldn't do that, would they? It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
Siegfried and Roy are calling it quits, man. I mean, the act, that is. And you figure they had a pretty good run.
They had a pretty good run. I mean, I got to tell you, I don't know anything about the lion taming business. I wouldn't know how to tame a lion. You know, the closest I get to lions is never. I don't even go to zoos, and I don't watch Wild Animal Kingdom or Animal Freaking Planet. I mean, I dig it to a point, you know, but I like those shows where it shows like the jackals tearing into a reindeer or something. I dig that.
Here on the Serengeti, the jackal has a repast.
You know, they're running around and they're ripping the entrails out of some deer. Oh, well, I'll watch that. I like to see how they all hang together. But beyond that, I don't dig animals in captivity. Call me crazy, call me some whack job, animal-loving, animal-hugging, animal-making-love-to kind of a guy. I am going to be spending the weekend by myself with my cat. That's as close as I get to lions. I got one of these striped alley cats at home. He's a tomcat. I don't go down to SeaWorld to look at Shamu bounce a freaking beach ball off his snout. Thank you. So I don't go see the lions, so I don't know anything about it. But I figure, I don't know how many years these guys have been at it. Let's say 30. How long do you figure they've been at it? 30? I think 30 years is a damn good run working with lions and not getting your face torn off. Not having just, you know, all of a sudden getting up in the morning and there's no head. I don't care how good you think you are. And I know that the guy worked with them until they were adults. And who was the guy? Roy? Roy Horn? Roy was the guy that worked with the little cubs or kittens or whatever the hell you call a small lion until they were just the right size to rip the entrails right out of your average passerby. I mean, that's what the guy did, man. He worked with these things until they were the size where they could consume not only a whole man, but the man and his wife and part of his kids, leaving just one alive to tell the tale. And this guy is running around, walking on their backs. I mean, this clown, I never saw the act, but I saw one promo where there's Roy straddling it, and he's got a glass of wine, and, you know, you know the lion's thinking, oh, baby, one of these days. Woo, yeah, won't be long now, man. Now, Teresa Heinz is on here. I didn't hear her speak. Does she have a German accent or anything? Does she sound like an Afrikaner?
My husband,
I didn't hear her talk. She's making out with him on this film. I just want to hear. Dig it, man. She's got, like, the Afrikaner thing. So any cat that works with lions, every day is gravy. And I figure he got away. I think Roy, God bless you, man, but I think you got away lucky just having the thing chew onto your neck, puncture a blood vessel or whatever. It didn't drag you off like a rag doll. I mean, can you imagine that? Did those cats ever think that that's how it was going to end? I bet you know, you couldn't plan it any better. The last show they ever gave, Roy is being dragged off stage like a rag doll. The last show, I bet you they figured the last show they would give would have fireworks that would put that Carrie celebration to shame. I bet you they, I don't know, they'd stand out there and say goodnight and bow deeply from the waist, and the lions would get up on their hind legs and go, meh, or whatever, and, you know, neigh like horses, and then they'd run around the stage, and there'd be fireworks outside of Caesar's, and everybody would start weeping, and they'd come up with a large bouquet of flowers, and they'd give them a testimonial, and they would say, thank you, Siegfried and Roy, for the thousands and thousands of performances of great entertainment. We can't thank you enough. That's, I bet you, how they envisioned it was going to end. Instead, the guys dragged off stage like he's Fay Wray with King Kong. Just I'm going to tell you right now. Do you guys ever remember the old comic Dick Shawn? Very funny guy. You know how he went? He went on stage and they thought it was a gag. They thought it was, yeah, Dick had a heart attack on stage, collapsed, and they thought it was part of the act. Man, that's how I want to go. Oh, please let me go like that. Just all of a sudden a shooting pain down the left arm and you'll just hear something like,
"Hello? Is the host there?"
And you just hear my body. So, Siegfried and Roy, the days of Siegfried and Roy, not that I, you know, these cats were like not what I would call top of mind until Roy got chewed on by the cat. Until then, the only people that really knew of Siegfried and Roy were the old ladies that went to Vegas to see him. You know, the Wayne Newton crowd. That's what I figured. Now, all of a sudden, the guy's he's in a hospital bed because some lion did what came natural, which is to basically say, okay, you hit me with that whip one more time, and, you know, and he just grabbed him by the throat and decided he'd shake some sense into him. He shook some sense into him, all right. The guy's out of show business. Well, you know what? Now it leaves them more time for each other. Okay, 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.